Hi, my name is Steven.
Hi, I'm April.
This is the 3Pi² ABA Business Leaders Podcast, where we discuss topics on how to create and grow an ethical and sustainable ABA practice.
Together, Steven and I owned a 7-figure ABA practice that provided both clinic and in-home services.
3Pi² has helped over 900 ABA practices start up and expand with our comprehensive products and services geared specifically to ABA. Now, let's get to the podcast.
Welcome to ABA Business Leaders Podcast, brought to you by
3Pi².
3Pi². Okay. Today we have a very exciting guest. I know those of our listeners who have been following along know that we went to a CPABA conference.
Yep.
That Jennifer Fitzpatrick put together. We had Jennifer on the podcast as well.
Yep.
And so we had an amazing opportunity to be able to meet our guest for today. And all of our values align. And per our conversation prior to hitting record, our parenting woes as well, I think.
And our car problems.
Yeah. So, hey, you know, we're in it today together. Yes. So we would like to introduce to you Meg Solomon. Meg is the founder and lead BCBA at ABA Across Environments, where she's making strides in creating values-based, person-centered behavior change programs. Meg's journey is inspiring. She began her career exploring corporate environments, high-end retail, and even the culinary world, but ultimately found herself drawn to work that aligns with her core value of helping others. Her path into behavior analysis started after volunteering with children and immersing herself in neurodiversity, neuroscience, and play-based learning. It was during this journey that she discovered a passion for ABA and went on to earn her master's degree at Baylor University. In 2015, she became a BCBA, and after seeing the challenges families face with generalizing behavior changes from clinical settings to the home and community, she took a bold step. In 2018, Meg founded ABA Across Environments, aiming to create sustainable, life-changing impacts in all settings where families live and grow. Now, Meg leads with ACT as the cornerstone of her approach, emphasizing values and real-world impact. Her experience as a business owner, BCBA, and parent has truly shaped her innovative approach to supporting individuals and families. We're excited to dive into her insights on embedding motivation, values, and care into our work and learn more about her journey. So welcome, Meg.
Hey, thanks, Steven. Thanks for having me. This is really exciting. And it was really great to meet y'all at CPABA.
Sorry.
And that was actually, it was an awesome experience, I think. And it was cool to see so many like-minded professionals or people who were at least experiencing some similar struggles. Which I think was neat. And I think that's also what we really kind of hit on not too long ago when we were talking, which are the struggles of being in the ABA business world I feel like every time that I feel like we've gotten it kind of like figured out, then there's like another struggle that ends up coming back or coming in addition to. So yeah, that's always kind of the way it goes.
Absolutely. Well, and Meg, we brought you on today, too, because you actually get to launch our How Can We Help series that we are running after I Hate My Job series.
Oh, my gosh.
Y'all, you know, and so
you've presented the problem, right?
Yes. That's right. Yes. We presented the problem, but we can't, like, end the calendar year on that. So you are the first of a few guests that... Actually, I believe all of our guests we met at the CPABA conference. Thank you, yeah. Jennifer Yay. Fitzpatrick, because what an awesome opportunity of networking that was.
Absolutely.
So yeah, that's I failed to mention that at the beginning, but that is, we're kind of at the how can we help, right? So
yes, perfect.
There's a lot, right? There's a lot that we can do to help each other in the field and to help the field itself as we grow and learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say too, like, I think a lot of my inspiration has come from utilizing ACT in my own life, right? And this started back in 2020. Jonathan Tarbox spoke at WEBA, but it was all virtual because it was 2020. Right, exactly. And it was beautiful because there were major fires and power outages. And so he lost power halfway through and he had to pivot and then pick back up and then do it again at a different time. And it was one of those things where, like, he immediately, like, practiced diffusion and acceptance in the moment, like modeling it, right? For like this, you know, room full of virtual hundreds of BCBAs. And I was like, oh man, this is great. This is applying our science in a really impactful way. And he and Christina Rodriguez have done a lot of just positional papers and things like that to really propose how ACT can help with this shift, in all honesty. And like, this is one of the solutions, in my opinion, because it's very person-centered, it's very personalized. And the way that we practice in our agency is that everybody who implements or teaches somebody else how to use these principles has to also be practicing them in their own lives, right? So the choice really does start with the implementer. And I think that that's often where we get hung up on, we talk about this often, like that inner behavior of like, no, we don't always need to say what we're feeling, but maybe we need to say it to ourselves. Because if we can acknowledge it, then we're at least naming the elephant in the room, right? And then from there, we're going to be able to make a choice of what can I do that's in alignment with my values as a business leader, as a BCBA, as a supervisor, as a behavior technician, as a caregiver, right? Or any other stakeholder in this ABA field that we're in. So I really think that that's where we need to start, is that kind of introspection when it comes to exploring what acceptance and commitment therapy practice looks like for us as individuals. Do y'all have a lot of experience with ACT?
I don't. It is, I have a lot of books.
Yeah.
And I've listened to quite a few podcasts. And I'm on the journey of like self-teaching myself. I attended a couple of CAUs. I'm going to be honest, it didn't give me much more information than I already knew. And I really am like the type of person who likes to really dig in and learn all the parts about it.
I know what you mean.
So that's kind of where I'm at right now. And that's part of the beauty of like why I'm so excited about talking to you, because I do want to learn more about it. I would love to learn about it in all aspects of my life.
Right.
But I feel like it's one of these things. I don't know if it's just like the way my brain works, but I'm sure a lot of people are the same. But I start to learn about something like this and I'm like, oh, this can be so helpful to so many people. But I think this is one of those that like mindfulness, yeah, and a lot of
seems like mindfulness to me.
Stephen, in fact, I was going to ask you too, because I know you have a lot of practice with mindfulness. It's a lot of mindfulness practice.
Yeah.
When we, like the last couple of years of our ABA therapy company, we made a shift with people because, you know, often you hear leave your crap at the door, right? You got to come
in
here professional. And so we said, no, bring it with you, right? Like acknowledging that you're having a bad day is going to help you have a little bit less of a bad day, right? Just knowing that, this is terrible and awful. But it can also be here and I can still be professional and I know that I'm here to help kids and know that I'm here to do a really important job. I think it just makes it just a little bit easier if you can acknowledge it's here versus making those reactive decisions and you're like, oh, just having a terrible day. Well, let's talk about that, or maybe even not talk about it, but talk about it internally, right? Like,
exactly.
And just realize it's here, and it's okay that it's here.
I think that's the thing, too, that I think is so important to what I'm wanting to bring information to techs and behavior analysts, you know, those helpers in the field, is what does that look like? Because we could say it. We've said it before. Mm-hmm. You know, we said it within our company. We tried to help model that. We didn't quite get as far as we wanted to because, like, we ended up closing. But I think, too, like, what does that mean? That doesn't mean showing up at the house and venting to the mom that, I had this terrible day, blah, blah, blah. You know? It's like, so, yeah, okay, what does that mean? So don't leave it at the door, but...
Right. Also bring it with me, but then also don't unload it on the caregiver. Right. All of those things.
Right. And so it's like, what does that mean? So what would be, like, a first step of what that would look like?
So really, this is one of the things that we found to be the most helpful, and in all honesty, and we've had a behavior technician express this to us too, that this is almost like a vetting process.
Yeah.
which is that we don't, or that we promote a self-evaluation that includes a behavior intervention plan for yourself that's in alignment with ACT. So your first go-to is going to be like that pause, acknowledgement, and then moving forward with what your values might indicate, right? So you're talking about like some more immersive trainings and things like that. And I would say that Stephen Harris has several trainings that are long and in-depth workshops that help you practice it for yourself. And again, if you're practicing it for yourself, that's going to be easier for you to then kind of explain it to your staff, so your behavior technicians who are in that situation. The way that I describe values is just kind of that intrinsic reinforcement. So it's keeping you going, what wakes you up in the morning other than physiological needs, like going to the bathroom. But yeah, so like that's what your values should be. So that's kind of like the first step is knowing sure with assuredness, what do you value?
And that's one of the things when Stephen started that journey, he brought back to our family was mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Not much later, I started my own journey with a life coach. And that was one of the first things, that she talked about, and being like ADHD and having trouble making choices, that was really overwhelming for me, that whole process. And so, right? I just want to validate for people out there that a lot of times we throw around like, oh, know your values. Sometimes like knowing what your values are is a whole process within itself, and it's very difficult, and it's okay if you can't like name your values. In fact, 100%. It's more important to be like in tune with your values and then really be part of who you are, because otherwise you can't use them as your compass, right? If you're just like, oh, my values are, you know, kindness and, whatever.
What are you doing?
Exactly. What does it mean?
Demonstrating.
Right. Exactly. And so like, even in our world, you know, in our, ABA world of like, define that, you know, what does that look like? You know,
right.
Operationalize that. And so let's talk a little bit about values. You know, when I was starting, it was like the list, right? Like, oh, like here's a list. Right. And I was like, I don't know, like all of these, none of them, some right. of them. And then what I learned too was like, okay, well you can pick some and then you can make it your own, and yeah. you choose your definitions for your exactly. values.
So one of the things that we actually do, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was exactly what I found personally too. And there was, and I'm so sorry that I can't recall which Brené Brown book this was, but she has just like a list of values, right? And I was like, okay, well, I'll look from this. And I was like, that's still really overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And so I got to thinking, I was like, okay, let's look at this from a behavior analytic lens. And this was several years ago, again, like in 2020, whenever I was really looking through what this looked like for us. And I say S because again, like it, for me, it comes back to the family. It comes back to like me personally, it comes back to my husband and our relationship too. And then as our agency. So when I was looking at the way to do this, I thought, okay, you have to break it down in a way that's going to make it easier to then break it down further. And then break it down further so that then you are left with just 3 to 5 based on this huge extensive list, right? So what we've done is we took all of the kind of I went back to my old grad school work with reliability and validity, right? That's our measure and evaluation coursework. And I was like, okay, so we have to make sure that what we're measuring is going to be valid. And how we're going to be presenting this information is going to be reliable. So we created just an assessment with, I want to say that we have 5 to 10 values and examples of those values in each. And then what we've done is that you circle the ones that are most in alignment with your current behavior. And then from there, you circle the ones that are most in alignment from there. And then you narrow it down from there so that, again, you are just left with, like, you know, 1 to 5, essentially. And if you start with 1, that's okay. That's where we find that a lot of our younger learners are. I have a girl who's 15 years old, and we've been doing ACT with her since 2020. Mm-hmm. And her number one value is her caregiver, her primary caregiver, and making that caregiver proud and that engagement and that connection with that caregiver. And so we just are always referring back to that and prompting back to that and getting her back to that value so that she stays on track, essentially. Because again, when we look at ACT, like it goes beyond our values too. We can get more into that, but it gets really deep and introspective. And that's something that a lot of behavior analysts shy away from. And that's also what we find too with our training with behavior technicians, especially if they've come from other ABA agencies, which is like, why are you talking about my feelings? Because your feelings matter.
Yeah. And I think that's a big part. So when, you know, same COVID timeframe, the 2020 to 2022, when we made big shifts and we decided to close our business and decided to move to Canada and, you know, all the things, right? We made big shifts and, you know, we were also struggling with a lot of other different parts of our life. And looking back on it now, I can see that it was like a lot of growth personally that, you know, sometimes when rapid growth happens fast, like you're just not ready for, you know, like it's a lot, right? Like where we're looking at the inner behavior, that was like the big piece where when we were closing our company, we were going through all the life changes, and then there was still ABA here, right? And and with our own parenting, we had some complex things that we were working through that it didn't seem like just your typical FBA was touching, right?
Seriously.
There was so much inner stuff going on within ourselves, within our child. And I started to question ABA. And I started to question, like, and then, you know, you, like, all of the propaganda out there, not the only one questioning ABA. And, so I started feeling like, this can't be, like, how can this all fit together? How can this work? Because we were also, like, on this mindfulness journey, and I like started to understand more about conscious parenting, and a lot of that really aligned with my values so well. But then there was ABA, and in my mind, you know, it was like, okay, we have this category and we have this category. How do I fit these together and then both be true? And then, you know, but that is the piece, is that like those internal events, right? My majority of work in ABA for many, many years has been in the littles, right? The early learners, the toddlers, the preschoolers, the early elementary age children. And a majority of the children that I provided services for were still acquiring language and acquiring a way of communicating in general. And so having conversations about how you feel was not in my repertoire. Now, looking back, I can recognize now ways I could have included that even in early learners, right? But yeah, I don't know. Talk more about that. Like, make those connections of like those inner feelings, and how can we do that in ABA, right?
So this is, again, and I was talking to a colleague who's also here in Colorado about this, because we were also talking about how Colorado seems really forward thinking, but every agency, or not every, I apologize. There's so many agencies around me that are still decades behind us. And so I'm so glad you brought this up, because if you're practicing ACT yourself, you start to become more aware of your own behaviors, those other subtle nuanced changes and shifts to your facial expressions, to your body language, to what you might be holding onto or clenching, right? Mm-hmm. Especially if a different stimulus changes in your environment, right? If there's a setting event going on that might be contributing to these feelings that you're having, right? So when you start to pay attention to those shifts in your own body, it's really then almost second nature to find those observations and those shifts that you have with your learners. And so that's where I find ACT to be really, really powerful. It's almost like you're like a mind reader at some point, but you're not, you're just reading behavior, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, so you talked a lot about like the littles. We started with ACT, this ACT journey with our girl who's now a teenager. So she was a tween when we started this with her, but we were seeing some significant behaviors, self-injury to the point of blood, to the point where she was in a long-term day treatment facility. Then COVID hit and they were like, sorry, you got to go home. And mom was like, what am I going to do? And we were all virtual. So this was when we really started diving into recognizing, like, right away, like, her number one thing is mom. Whatever we can do. So, like, we had mom completely in on these telehealth sessions. But then what we started noticing was when there were different stimuli that would change in her environment, she would have very subtle behaviors that would shift and change. And so once we started having her identify those behaviors herself, right, like that self-monitoring that we always tout as being very evidence-based in behavior analysis, right? So we had her start identifying her own behaviors. And Brown and Kubina have this beautiful article about tracking inner behavior and then essentially providing the replacement behavior of one-minute timings of positive statements. We started doing that with her. We still do that with her to this day because it is one of the most powerful now antecedent interventions for her that we've ever found. We were using it as in response. We were using it in teaching. Now it's just one of those things that we go to throughout her day as like a little check-in. Yeah. And that's where you see this happen. But I it's just so interesting to me, like when you are practicing this yourself, how much more easily it comes to then practicing it with your with kiddos.
Yeah, for sure. I'll speak for Stephen for a second. You know, he talks about part of his mindfulness journey, like he didn't feel below the neck, right? Understanding sensations in your body and, oh, where are you holding tension and stress? Like, he's like, I didn't even know all the body part names of my body, you know?
The static line right here, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, totally. You don't even know the names of the body parts. That's such a great point. Mm-hmm. Or breathing, how important when we hold our breath, what that does.
Exactly.
And we're creating a really toxic space that inside of our main environment.
Okay, so focus on a tech or a behavior analyst in the field. And we're talking about, like, you did that, like, pre-screening, I believe is what you called it. We talk a lot about involving values within your hiring process.
Yes.
And so, you know, of course, there's like specific nuances and there's, you know, employment law and things like that you have to follow.
We're not going to ask about these things during the hiring process, right? Yeah.
Exactly, right? And so what would be some ways would you say that, so we do have like a lot of value, we coach a lot of our companies that we work with to ask specific questions that will help you get at the values that you're looking for, right? Like looking at the behaviors that, you know, that occur when, you know, you're living by these certain values. But we also talk about living out your values and your mission statement. It's not just something on the wall. So if it really truly is part of your culture, I believe, and, you know, this may be a little woo-woo part of here, but, like, I believe that we attract those people sometimes. Yeah. But let's face it, we're also going to sometimes, you know, hire that person because they interviewed okay and we really need
verbal
to fill the space
with three,
and they've got some experience with kids and that's really more amazing sometimes to for them to know how to play with kids and even to know like about ABA, you know.
We can
you know form this from the ground up. But how do we embed that, those values, like within that hiring process, using ACT and like showing like, hey, this is how, you know, this is how we practice. This is how it shows up in our, you know, in our work environment. And I don't know, you know what, do you see what I'm asking?
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say that this is still always the process that we modify the most because of this issue that we find, right? Because you're right. People interview so well. And even if we put them in, we use this kind of old restaurant term, it's called a stage, which is like how well you do in the field, if we kind of leave you on your own a little bit. So we will do that essentially without, I mean, like we aren't going to leave an interviewee alone with a learner, but we will have them interact with a learner with another trainer who's a peer conducting that interview. So that's one way that we've really tried to help is just to see how well do they communicate initially with their peers, and then how well are they going to engage with learners, even with somebody observing them, right, with these observer effects. Because that's one of the things that we find often is that what you see during supervision is not often what, or not always what's happening then whenever supervision's not occurring, right? So we have to see those types of behaviors essentially on a broad perspective to begin with. And then if we see that kind of disengagement or things that we're like, okay, well, that was kind of a struggle for you to interact with them, or you actually didn't ask us any questions whatsoever, or you're like, no, that was great, and that was it, right? Or like, we handed you materials to read and you didn't read them. Like, there are those types of things that are signals, right, to their peer that you're not going to be a good team member. So yeah. I think that's one of the things that we've tried to do. But again, like, this is something that we're constantly tweaking.
Yeah, that sounds very similar to the process that we were slowly tweaking as well. We definitely found that seeing how they interact with individuals that we provide services for, like, and because that's really telling.
Well, and I think also we talked about this too, which was the understanding of like that this field is really difficult to work more than 30 hours, more than full time. If you're trying to work overtime or more than 40 hours in this field, like, it's going to be a fast road to burnout, and not because you don't care.
100%. In fact, it could be opposite, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's also, I think, too, where ACT can be both helpful, but then if you are like, well, but I'm doing this committed action, it can also be harmful, right? And so that's why when we're thinking about one of the cornerstones of ACT is choice making, but then also the recognition of, is this currently helping or is this currently not helping, right? So it's not this good or bad idea, but it's about, in this current context, is what I'm doing helping? Mm-hmm. Or is what I'm doing potentially causing myself or others harm?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I wonder too, like, I'm kind of shifting gears a little bit because this is for techs and behavior analysts. However, our audience are ABA business owners. And so balancing that as we are doing this, how can we help series? I'm trying to be able to see both sides of it. But let's say that we're a business owner. We're like, yeah, this sounds good. I'm going to learn ACT. I'm going to bring it into our company. I'm going to bring it into my life first, and I'm going to invite it to the company. Maybe we'll all learn together. Maybe I'll bring, like, you know, my clinical director who, you know, I don't, whatever. Or maybe you're a solo shop here, and you're like, okay, I'm going to do this for myself, and then it will, like, spill over to my clients. But, like, how do you go? Like, you know, like, oh, do you put it as part of the job description? Because you can't make someone do this, right?
No, you really can't. But then what you'll find is that they also will recognize that they can't do this job. So what we have found is that the people who are not willing to do this type of work are also the ones who aren't going to last in this current field the way that it is, for better or for worse, the way this field is, right? So that stinks, right? But that is the unfortunate reality of where we are right now, which is it does take that self-reflection. It does take you not compartmentalizing, right? And like what we were saying earlier, leaving it at the door, it's impossible. So you do have to actually do that work so that you aren't potentially causing harm. And I would even say that this is part of our code of ethics, right? When we're looking at the ways that our biases, our implicit bias, can affect behavior and being culturally responsive, what does that mean? What does that look like, right? Well, you have no idea unless you've actually looked at yourself and actually examined your own behaviors, right? Reckoned with the potential harm that you may have caused with your past behavior, mm-hmm. accept that for what it is, a learning opportunity for you now, right? So instead of just like shoving it aside like it never happened, reckon with the fact like, yeah, you know what? I've used punishment procedures in the past. I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy with how I've talked to employees sometimes in the past. I am not proud of some of the past behaviors that I've engaged in because they have caused other people harm. That doesn't discount how I can show up today, right? In fact, just acknowledging those past behaviors is part of recognizing my implicit bias. It's part of showing up culturally in a culturally responsive way, right? Yeah. So I guess that's what I would say, is that that's the unfortunate reality. If like, if you aren't willing to do this, like, I don't know what else to tell you. It's not going to work out. I can lead you to that direction more quickly by terminating your employment, or we can string each other along and you can continue to call out 3 days a week. That's the way it goes as a business owner, right? Like, it, like, that is like factual honesty right there.
Hello, everyone. I'm April and this is Steven.
Hey.
We've both been in your shoes, running an ABA practice, juggling the challenges of staff management, and trying to build a system that works. When we first opened our clinic, we faced high turnover, inconsistent training, and no clear path for staff growth. It was exhausting trying to figure it all out while keeping our business running.
Yes, for sure. We spent countless late nights trying to solve these problems, and after hundreds of hours, we finally created something that worked. It's the Behavior Tech Checklist. The checklist transformed how we trained our staff. It streamlined the entire process. It gave BTs a clear path forward, including raises that were tied to skill development.
We work with thousands of ABA practices across the country, and they all tell us the same thing. We need a better way to train staff. We're struggling with turnover. Our team needs more support and a clearer path to grow. So that's why our Behavior Tech Checklist became so popular. It's now used by hundreds of ABA practices. But as great as the checklist is, we did realize that it has limits. Yeah. It was built in Excel, so it requires some technical know-how. And it only focused on behavior technicians. So we knew there had to be a better way to address the needs of all staff, not just BTs.
And that's why we decided to create something bigger. This is much bigger. It's the ABA Business Leaders Training Program. This program takes everything that we learn from the Behavior Tech Checklist and it expands it to include every role in your practice. Behavior technicians, directors, behavior analysts, and admin staff. Here's what you can do with it. You can build custom levels and skills for each job title, set clear requirements for promotions and raises, and even create bonus systems tied to objective performance metrics.
And let's talk about the training. The program includes a training store, so you can assign high-quality courses to your staff with just a few clicks. It's simple, it's streamlined, and it's built specifically for ABA practices. We work with over 1,000 ABA practices and likely support over 20,000 staff members, and the feedback is consistent. Staff want better training, more support, and clear growth path. The ABA Business Leader Training Program gives them all of that and more.
We understand what it's like to want to do everything that you can for your staff, but feel stretched for time and resources. That's why we built this program, to make managing and growing your team easier and much more efficient. More than 1,000 ABA business owners trust us to help them streamline training, reduce turnover, and build sustainable businesses.
And now, for Black Friday, we're offering the biggest deal we've ever done. From Friday, November 28th to December 4th, for every dollar you spend on the ABA Business Leaders Training Program, you'll get credit back for handbooks, trainings, or consulting. That's right, dollar for dollar. You'll get access to the best training system and the top resources in the field, like our popular handbooks and expert consulting.
So if you're ready to transform your practice, click the link below and join the hundreds of other ABA business leaders already using this program. With this special Black Friday deal, there's no better time to get started.
Invest in your team, your practice, and your peace of mind. This offer won't last long, so don't wait. Click the link below, sign up today, and take the first step towards a more streamlined and successful practice. Well, what if... How would you start, if you're embedding this into your company as a brand new business owner and you're building mm-hmm. this at, from, you know, as you're going, that could potentially be one might say easier. but if you already have a way of practice, it sounds like for your clinic, for your agency, it was a shift.
Yeah, we very much had to make a shift.
So like, what does that look like? How do you, if you decide, okay, this sounds really good. I really want to be part of this. I want to start shifting this. Maybe you say, oh, well, yeah, I've already been doing a lot of this work in my personal life. And this sounds great. I want to bring it to my company. I want my staff to be able to access it. Like what would you recommend some of the first steps being?
So I would recommend that as many BCBAs as you can become trained in these practices, but with the specific workshops that Dr. Hayes has put together. And he's done this with Dr. Belial and Dr. Dixon. So he partners with several people, but he goes around the world. He also has virtual workshops. They're on Praxis. But I would highly recommend that. They're not cheap, but they're also not expensive. Like when I look at the investment now, it's great, right? Because it's been so impactful for how we practice and how it's just been beneficial in my own life to where it hasn't felt that expensive, if that makes sense, but it is expensive if the trainings are. But I would say have as many people as you can experience that training and those workshops. And he has an immersion one, and he has one that's kind of like for beginners, like an introduction. They're both great, and they're both incredibly helpful, because if you can have your supervisors practicing these things and practicing these skills and constantly talking about it, I would say that's also one of the biggest shifts that we had, was that we just were constantly talking about ACT then, constantly talking about our values, constantly talking about like, oh man, way to engage in the present moment, right? Like, so we were really going for like that feedback part, like the feedback and response section of BST when it came down to it, so that we were recognizing that we were practicing it, we would reinforce that behavior. And so now it is one of those things where I would say that it's the hardest shift is with our new employees, because they don't trust it. They don't trust that we are not a dishonest employer. And because there are a lot of dishonest employers out there who are like, no, I really want you to take that time off for yourself. And then they get penalized for it. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Or they'll say, no, I really want you to do this, but, and there's still some sort of like, I've got to put you on coaching because you're not meeting this KPI. And you're like, attached. There's always a struggle. Like, but with us, like, we're like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I'm looking at somebody's schedule right now and they're just not available at all today. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's fine. And then I have somebody else who's not available until 1, and I have another person who's not available after 3, right? Like, so we accommodate these types of things and these types of requests, because we also recognize that, and I think this is because my husband and I both came from the restaurant world or the gig world, right? We're like, you can make your own schedule. You can be like, ooh, I made enough money in tips last night, so let me release my shift tomorrow so that I don't have to work today. That was so great for our mental health, right? And so we recognize that you're not always going to know when you need a mental health break.
Yes, that's really big. You know, that was one of the things that we were shifting to. And I had a hard time figuring that out of how to do it. So the way that I approached it was, you know, let me know before you need it, right? Like if you're starting to feel, because we talked about like the, you know, feeling the signs of burnout. And there again, like, as I look back to that and know now what I know now, it's almost
impossible, right?
It's like, how can you, like, especially if you don't have those skills mm-hmm. already, number one,
you aren't even feeling the burnout.
Then
you are so numb to it, right?
That's why it happens. And sometimes the burnout shows up as a fever and a sore throat, right?
And 100%.
And sometimes you just literally just wake up one morning and you just don't have the mental capacity to get out of bed. And
no, you wake up, and honestly, like when I was a behavior technician, you would wake up sometimes in tears.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I can't do this today. I am not in the space to do it.
Exactly. And, you know, I have most of my experience is working in home. And I have some clinic experience, but more as an owner versus a active employee, right? It was like all in home for me. And there were some challenging homes to step into.
Yeah.
And where I would just absorb all of the behavior. I mean, not all the behavior, all the energy. Just yes. And I would just walk in the, and this was like years and years ago. And I didn't have the understanding of what was happening, but I knew I was walking into a house and I would just like absorb it all. And it was, I feel like I was a really great tech. I did a great job. People liked me. Families liked me. But at what cost to me?
Right, exactly.
You know, I left. You know, I would leave the session and maybe it would be multiple sessions or multiple weeks that it would build up, and then you couldn't function.
Right. That's what happens. And like, I think this is what we forget too, because behavior analysts don't like to talk about this, but there are what ends up happening when you ignore those signals in your body, physiological responses start to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when the sore throat and the runny nose show up. That's when suicidal ideations can show up for some women and some men, right? Because it's difficult. We're in a position where we take on so much of a burden, right? Oh my gosh, I can't remember who wrote this book, so I'll have to find it again. But there is a book about trauma stewardship, which is essentially about you're providing so much compassion towards others that you start to become numb to yourself. And you also start to become numb to the environment, right? And then what ends up happening are those extreme behaviors. You're like, where did this come from? It came out of the blue, right? Like our kids. It didn't come out of the blue. There were so many ignored signals. All of these antecedents were happening. All of these behaviors were signaling that there was something bad about to happen. We just ignored them. So it's crazy too when you think about it, and how detrimental that type of avoidance is.
Yeah. You know, I get to talk to a lot of ABA business owners and my work with Steven. And personally, I feel so validated. Not that I hate that. I hate that anyone is in the point of stress and having hardships that they're having as being a business owner. But I had no idea. I had no idea that I was not alone. I knew it was hard, right? And it was hard. But the level, like all of the parts that go along with being an ABA, a BCBA business owner, and having all of the hats and the clinical and the business and marrying all those parts, and then all of a sudden, like managing staff and you know, all of the things that go along with it. I had no idea that I was in good company with so many people who felt the same way I did. But more specifically, I'm playing around with I'm offering some coaching services within 3Pi Squared, ABA business leaders, and trying to look at bringing in some of these, like helping business owners, like find their values and make some, you know, some changes within, how they look at things. And that's opened me up to even another level of vulnerability, because I'm attracting some of these people who are willing, okay, because this is not about how to make your processes and procedures for payroll. This is like, okay, I got to talk about me and how I feel through this. And so those brave souls who have come to me to start talking about that, I'm getting even more information about how hard it is. The sad thing, and it's relatively new to me hearing so much of this, and so I'm still processing it myself and trying to figure out how can we help, right? Is this level of perfectionism. And I know in general, okay, I'm not just trying to be like, oh, ABA field, it's like has all these issues with all of these things, because I know that we're not the only professional field out there. We're not the only helping field out there, but that is our audience. That's who we are. And that's who we talk about. So I don't want to say that we're the only people who feel this way. That in itself can be very limiting, but because of who we are, because of what we provide, and because we are manipulating and shaping behaviors, it puts us in this very specific perfectionism. You know, we all talk, I'm just going to say, we all talk about the God complex of some BCBAs, right?
100%.
That's just kind of a real thing that we talk about.
We can
about
save the world.
Yeah, exactly. But along, even if you don't necessarily fit that description, it seems like there's a really high level of perfectionism within the field. And, you know, like expecting yourself to be perfect, accepting your staff to be perfect. I mean, heck, look at the treatment plans we write sometimes.
Oh my God, right?
You know, like who can show up in a very specific, accurate, fluent way 95% of the time across 3 occurrences in a 2-week period?
No one.
We're human. Yeah. And so I think that we start to, I'm just going to say, like, we can start nitpicking behavior, right?
We really do. And we start nitpicking our staff's behavior then consequently too.
I don't know. So like what do we do about this? Because these individuals who have so bravely shared with me about this, the stories are the same coming from different individuals' mouths. And it's like, I thought everyone had all of their processes and procedures for a business. I thought everybody knew.
Oh my God,
exactly.
No.
Exactly. And I'm like, no, I'm so sorry if I gave you that.
Everybody, this is what I have known from talking to business owners who are my friends and my colleagues. Everybody is up a different Schitt's Creek.
Yes. Yes.
And the reason I say this is because we all got into, I was fortunate enough to grow up in an entrepreneurial family. So I had some experience with how to run a business, but none of my parents had really employees other than a couple, right? So managing employees was difficult. That was a big shift. Luckily, I had experience with that in my 20s, but I also had to learn from my mistakes because I was a really crappy manager in my early 20s. And I didn't know that. But I had the experience, right? Like, so supposedly on paper, I was supposed to be a good manager. But when it came to actually managing people, I made a lot of mistakes, right? So I try to learn from those. But at the same time, like, they still come up every now and then. Because again, we're human.
Yeah.
We can't be perfect. But every business owner I know has something going on where they were like, well, crap, I didn't know that I needed to do this. Or I've got to update my handbook again. The handbook updates. Good God. I don't know how to say this to people, but like, use some common sense and there wouldn't be the need to have so many rules in a handbook, but it is just crazy sometimes where I'm like, I never thought that I'd have to like specifically spell this out, but here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, I talk about a lot, well, I've been talking out more often with these individuals that like good enough. What is good enough? Let's define good enough. Doesn't have to be 100%. It doesn't have to be, you know, perfect. It doesn't, you know, what's good enough.
Right.
And yes, there are policies and procedures that we have to put in place to, you know, for liabilities and, you know, we want to communicate clearly to our staff so that they know what to expect.
Right.
But if we have that culture within our community, within our work of communicating, and then maybe we don't have to have all of these policies and procedures spelled out quite so specifically for every occasion, because we get here's the policy.
Yeah.
Open door. Please come talk to me if you have any questions.
Exactly.
If you're not quite following it the way I intended this, I'm going to come talk to you in the kind way, right? Brené Brown, right? Kind is clear.
Right.
Clear is kind. It's just.
Well, and something else that we found too is that no matter how much business owners try to be approachable, there's still an intimidation factor.
There is.
And so one of the things that we found, and even for BCBAs, there's still an intimidation factor with approaching your supervisor with a question or with feedback or anything like that. So one of the things that we started with our company, and I love the person who created this. She's currently our scheduler. She doesn't even live in Colorado anymore, but we were like, you have to stay. You have to stay with us. And it's because she gets it. She's been in the trenches. She's worked in different agencies where the behavior technician's voices were not heard. And so she proposed several years ago a position for a behavior technician or RBT advocate. Yeah. So it's somebody who is a peer who's essentially there to be that liaison, right? And it's one of the best things for our company that we've had established. And I want to say it's been since like 2021 that we've had it. And it's fantastic. It's now no longer that person. She's our scheduler who lives in South Carolina, but we have another RBT who is. And she's newer to the position, but she gets it, right? She understands, like, there needs to be a space to express what's going on so that you can feel safe expressing yourself without fear of retribution, even if it's written in your handbook that there will be no retaliation, right?
Right. No, I mean, so many people, well, even a lot of these techs that, you know, when we looked for the social media posts and did some reactions mm-hmm. on them, you know, that's, you know, they went from one bad ABA company to another bad ABA company to another bad ABA company. And some, like, are like, okay, well, this is ABA. And then they make their assumptions off of that. Or, I just thought this is how you were supposed to do it. And maybe then they landed in a better ABA company. And then, I'm going to have a hard time trusting this, mm-hmm. right? And then, you know, if you do get to that point where you're able to learn and you see, oh, this is how it should be. Then there's some grieving and sadness
for what you did. Yeah. And that's what I find too with that shift. Like when we were talking about the self-reflection piece that we do at the beginning of our process. So like once somebody's hired with us, they start their 40-hour training and we do an in-house, in-person, well, it's hybrid because it's a lot of things that I've said, but then our lead trainer goes through everything with them. And then we do actual like client shadow sessions. But while they're doing this 40-hour training process, that's also when they're assigned the self-evaluation and behavior intervention plan, right? Because what we find is that if that's difficult to do and you can't put in place those coping skills, right, to help get you through those moments, you're going to burn out really quickly. You're going to not be able to show up for your clients and your learners and your families, or you're going to start carrying it home with you. And then you're not going to be sleeping at night, right? And then you're going to start becoming reactive, going to those default strategies that from when you were raised. You're going to stop relying on the science, stop relying on the behavior intervention plan for that client. And it's really just because you aren't assessing and evaluating and responding to your own behavior. And so if in that 40-hour training process, we find that to be a barrier, we will also usually find that then that person typically isn't then going to be in the capacity to do this job. And again, when we look at our code of ethics, this is something that we actually have to be holding accountable for, right? And I think that we've struggled for so long with how do we do this? How do we account for this behavior? Are we just going to tell them they don't have a job? Well, that might be the thing. It might be that if they've been with you for longer than 6 months, FMLA might be the best option for them because there are barriers to being able to ethically be able to provide the service that you're claiming to be able to provide. And I look to Camille Kolu, who's also here in Colorado. She's fantastic. She has done so much research in the world of trauma, and she has for a long time, since well before trauma-informed care became a buzzword. And she is one of those people who has lived it, she recognizes it, she knows it, and it's one of those experiences that she will share with vulnerability because she recognizes how important it is that we are accounting for how much trauma impacts behavior, but more importantly, how much trauma can also impact our caregivers' behaviors, right? And the behavior technicians' behaviors. So something that is from Nadine Burke-Harris's work, but also from Camille Kolu's, is the six buffers. So nutrition, exercise, sleep, relationships, coping skills, and access to mental health. So therapy, right? And then those coping skills, that's that behavior intervention plan. Something else that we do with our companies, we have a resource wall that just has QR codes that are full of, like, if you need access to a food pantry or if you need help, like, with creating a recipe, so like low-cost things like that, grocery lists. We also provide snacks and food at our center so that it's free access to anybody who needs it, right, without any question. But then we also make sure that they have access to readily accessible, like, mindfulness exercises. We have, like, our trails that are nearby here in Colorado where they can easily take a break and, like, go for a walk in between sessions, or access to low-cost or free online mental health providers as well. So providing access to these tools is often something that's just necessary to just know almost that it's there as a resource. Because I find that often people are just, they don't know how much support is actually out there because it's overwhelming.
Yeah. Well, and when you're in that spot, it's even,
you're frozen.
Unless it's there right in front, even sometimes when it's given to you, it's hard to take that next step. So if you're already in the overwhelm and you don't even know how to, sometimes you don't even know what to look for, how to look for it. So that's amazing. I want to come work for your company. It sounds like a really great place to work. I like that the focus is of taking care of your people.
Well, because I think you know this. There are so many companies that tout clients first. That's so stupid. Why not just say billable hours first? Like, that's essentially what you're saying when you say clients first. And I'm not discounting the needs of our clients at all when I say this. In fact, if anything, I would say that if you aren't putting an emphasis on your staff, you aren't putting your clients first, because that's where it has to come from. You have to be able to say, I'm supporting my staff in this way. When my staff's behavior is not in alignment, I'm going to call it in and figure out what's going on. Because that's the other thing too, that we found in our company is that, and you know this too, we all know this as human beings. Usually burnout is not because of work. It's because there's something going on in our personal lives and work is preventing us from being able to attend to that that's going on. Mm-hmm. Today is a perfect example of that, 100%. Right? So we get it, but we also recognize, like, okay, I can pivot here and I can recognize, like, yes, this is where my stress comes from. And just naming our stressors this morning alleviated some of that stress. So then we could move forward into a different way to pick up the kid from school because we needed to, and then still move forward without experiencing further burnout. Because if we had avoided this, then our schedules would have gotten off. And we already know what the season looks like for the next 6 weeks, right?
100%. 100%. Yep.
So we had to make a choice. What was going to be the most impactful for us today and the least attributing to our burnout. Here we are.
Wow, look, it's like a moment. Personally, yeah. I'm like, look at this growth here.
It's major growth. And we don't give each other enough credit for things like that. Or we don't give ourselves enough credit.
And that's what Steven and I, we kind of in a, like, little quirky way, we're obnoxious about it because that's what makes it fun.
Yes.
But we will pick up on those little things for each other, right? And it's like, whoa, I really like the way you blah, blah, blah. And it's like dumb and obnoxious and quirky and very, but we're like, yeah, you saw me, you know, like, it's just a part of our relationship and how we, like, cheer each other on. And you know, my son came up to me the other day, he put his hand on my shoulder and he was like, Mom, I see you're having a hard time and you're still cooking dinner. And I appreciate that. You know,
because you also have modeled it, and right. Steven has reinforced it, right? Like, that's beautiful.
And that's what I would love to see in more ABA agencies. And then we will be having more, we'll be having fewer conversations about burnout and turnover, right? If we're taking care of our people, we're taking care of ourselves. You know, it's that whole model of, like, you really do have to take care of yourself first, because if you're taking care of yourself, you can take care of your staff, which in turn takes care of your clients, the children, the whole point of us all being here in business, you know? So the six buffers. So I see where you've already incorporated a lot of those parts within, by even just making things accessible, like here's some snacks, you know, here are some resources, you know, and then you have the behavior intervention plan. I'm very curious about how people accept that. What kind of feedback do you get?
All right. I will say mixed reviews. Yeah. And I say that because that's honest, right? Like some people will be like, oh, wow. Like, I am so glad that you brought this to me. Some people will be like, I'm not answering a fucking thing on that questionnaire. And then other people will really dive in and be like, oh my God, I didn't recognize that about myself. I need to pause for a second. Is it okay? Right. And then other people just kind of complete it without anything else. Right. To me, that's not, how do I say this in a way that is really like, it's not a sign in any way how it gets completed. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. To me, what matters is, are you able to recognize that there, you've got some stuff in your past? That's all it really matters, right? Because when we're talking about that implicit bias, that's what we have to kind of to look for first, right? If you're avoiding it, again, you're probably not going to last very long. That is what it is. And it is because you're not accounting for your own behavior and how it's part of the environment for that learner. And that's unfortunate, truly unfortunate. Like you could be, and I've worked with some on paper, high quality, high fidelity behavior technicians who cannot account for their own behavior. They're such high maskers, right? That then they still fall apart and they still burn out. And it's because they didn't account for the fact that like, yeah, you're perfect at your job, but that's not what this is. That's not what behavior change is. Yeah. And that's hard.
You know, I think about from the very beginning of the field when I, well, not exactly the beginning, but once I was in the part of the field where I was able to have these conversations with parents, because like as a tech and stuff, like I, you know, I wasn't having these conversations, but
right.
But once I was at the part where it was appropriate to have these conversations with parents, you know, we talked about how this isn't just a fix your kid kind of program, because even yeah. still today, you know, that's it, as much as it's probably an incorrect thing to say, fix my kid. That's essentially what a lot of people are coming to us saying, like, I fix them. Like,
yeah. Oh, I get that
all the time. And so that conversation is one that I've had numerous times with parents of, it's not just about fixing your kids. It's looking at the family unit. It's looking at your mm-hmm. own behavior. There is a level of, a level of commitment that you have to give this. And part of that is going to look like changing how you react to things or changing how you show up in certain situations. So knowing what I know now and what I'm learning, I could see where that conversation with parents could even be more in depth when you're practicing with, you know, ACT alongside of ABA, what kinds of, and I know this is for, you know, geared for we're talking about techs and right. BCBAs, but I feel like there's room to chat about the parent for a little bit because they're so important. And a lot of the stressors that especially techs will talk about, because a lot of times, especially if you're looking at in-home services, they're in the front lines and they're the ones in there that can easily have those blurred lines because they're in there, you know, 10, 20, 30 hours a week, you know, especially if they're working with multiple kids in the same family and they're at this family's house for most of the week. Right. And so dealing with parents is it's can be, part of their burnout, just to say, right?
Absolutely.
Like, or you hear a lot of complaints, you know, or they're complaining about how the communication between the BCBA and the parents, and they're in the middle. Like, that is a big part of it. So, like, how can we show up in that realm of like the communication piece with the parents, and even how to understand where the parents are, and all of that dynamic.
So this is actually something too that we've recently changed, and we've done this actually. We had it in place, then we pulled it back, and then we put it back in place because we did find that there was still just this need that kept coming up, like you were pointing out. Yeah. We have a BCBA whose dedicated role is caregiver training and caregiver support. And this has taken a lot of meetings with the caregivers to recognize this, that the BCBA is there to support the case and the case management and provide the supervision for the learner. They're not there to be your sounding board and your venting therapy session. So please don't be alarmed when they say, hey, it sounds like you need to reach out to the BCBA caregiver support.
That's great that you can tell them who to reach out to. That's amazing that you're able to have that. Well, we have to
create that position, mm-hmm. though.
Because that's what, you know, if like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you about this, then what? Right?
Go we had to do it because it wasn't fair.
Yeah.
And no. What I was also finding too is that for both my BCBAs and my behavior technicians, parents were just monopolizing their time. Yeah. And I was like, that's not what they're here for. They're here for your child. I recognize you have stressors going on in your life. Here's what I'm going to recommend. And we've often done this too for caregivers, which is if y'all aren't going to attend family therapy or individual counseling or therapy, we won't be able to continue because nothing that we're going to propose is going to be effective, much less implemented. And that's something that we were pretty firm with a lot of our families, because we recognize that like, hey, you're not accounting for your own stuff, which is exactly why your kid's doing this. But because you keep putting it on us to fix your kid, that's where the problem is. So we do that often. And we will often, and when our caregiver support person comes up, usually meets with them too, after the first couple of times of just letting them vent, then we start calling in some actual action items, right? We'll put in place like, okay, let's assess the buffers, right? Where are you with these needs? We might put in place then a schedule. Like if we're there for 5 hours a day and it's over lunchtime, we're gonna say, hey, when we eat lunch, you're eating lunch with us. To model these behaviors of this schedule for your kid. Because sometimes what we find is this mother martyrdom. I can't eat. I have to feed my family. Girlfriend, your family is drowning because you are starving and yelling at everyone. So recognize you need to eat, and then you probably won't yell at everybody. Nap time is another thing that we help accommodate with. So like, we might end a session like 1 o'clock, 1:30, but then that last 20 minutes is specifically for nap hygiene. Low lights, setting some music that might be, right? Making a task analysis that's very behavioral analytic, supported by our research. Putting all of these things in place so that they're getting ready for nap time. And then that gives also then that caregiver, they can't give us the excuse of my kids don't nap. I'm like, yes, they do. We're the ones who put them down for their nap, and then we left. So, yeah. So that's how we support a lot of our parents, which is not necessarily like saying like you have to place this behavior on extinction, right? Or you have to always say like, I want, what do you want? That's not what parenting is. Parenting is meeting needs. It's not always prompting for communication. It's not always placing a behavior on extinction, because quite frankly, we don't have the time to place behaviors on extinction like that. Where I do not have time to go through a 2 to 4 hour extinction burst with my child who just really needs me as their mother.
Yes.
Right. That's the other thing too with the behavior analyst.
A supervisor years ago who said, it was like one of my staff, but I was in a meeting with them and one of the parents, and she said to the parent, she said, oh, no. Because this parent came in from a different type of ABA agency. And where essentially it sounded like she was expected to be a tech full time while she was living with her child. And so my BCBA staff said to this mom, oh, no, this is your home. This is not a clinic.
Yes.
We have different expectations for what you do than what you see our techs do. Like, you don't need to be replicating everything our techs do. There might be some certain strategies and certain things that we'll ask for you to do during certain times of the day. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to function. Yes. That would, if nothing else, that would escalate, right?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, and then you're talking about trauma, right?
From your primary caregiver?
Yeah. Yeah, and so what your parent, you know, what the parents are bringing to the picture, what you're bringing to the picture. I also had staff who I think were very much triggered and made perfect sense by certain dynamics within the family.
Yes.
When they're in that home, you know, how do you deal with that? Well, if you're already have that within your culture and you're already looking inward and you can recognize, oh, that's here, you know, that can be a big part about it. You know, practicing that pause. We have had
100%. We've had technicians who have said like, oh man, everything right now is a trigger. And so that's been one of those moments where we're like, okay, we really need to maybe take a step back, right? Yeah. To examine what's going on here. But then also, that also is another opportunity for us to recognize there's something else going on in the home that's not being presented to the BCBA. Mm-hmm. Parents are masking their behaviors, right? And that's a big thing that we see, is that when we talk about behavior technician burnout in the home, we forget that they see more than what any BCBA is going to see. And because they don't have the same level of experience or quote-unquote expertise, the parents aren't going to mask in front of them as much. Yeah. Because there's like this weird classism that ends up happening in that situation, right, for whatever reason. And I say that because I've been there. I know what it's like. You feel like a nanny, but you're like, I'm not their nanny. I'm their behavior technician. And this time I was a behavior interventionist, right? This was before the RBT certification. Yeah.
Sleep behavior therapist or something. I can't.
Yes. Yeah. It was always, every company had a different name for it. Yeah. Behavior something. Yeah. So that's what we did, right? But we know what that felt like. Yeah. And you also know that, like, we know I there are still some families I'm like, oh man, I wonder if they're still married. They fought a lot. Right? But that's what our behavior technicians are dealing with on a daily basis. Or the fact that, like, you've got this behavior intervention plan in place, but literally every time the child engages in the behavior that you're supposed to respond to, the parents zoom in and intervene and do exactly the opposite of the behavior plan, right? And then they're like, well, what am I even doing here? They won't even let me do what I might do my job. And so that is why we found that, like, we had to have that BCBA who was saying, stop it. You have to let them do their jobs.
Yeah.
And when we've taught our behavior technicians, and we really try to hammer this in, is if this is happening, reach out to our Slack channel, right? Even if it's to the general everybody channel, this is happening right now. I need somebody to step in. And really, but like, step in meaning like, I need the BCBA to call the parent and say, please let them do their job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it puts them in such an awful position.
Yeah. I like that, having like kind of like a liaison advocate type position for parents, for techs, because it does kind of give those, well, it gives those channels for the communication where it might not be, even like you said, even if we're like, oh, please come talk to me, right? Yeah, there. We had a thing. We tried a thing. I feel I got feedback that it was helpful in the fact that our staff felt supported. I don't feel like it still did quite what I wanted out of it. But we had like a RBT round table. We had a leadership team, and on our leadership team, we had a tech who wasn't necessarily even like in training to become a BCBA. They're a really good tech that was on our team that was well liked by their peers. And, you know, and so they would run the round tables, and we would do it virtually, and we didn't have a BCBA there, or not even a BCBA in training, because sometimes that could also be myself included. And then I had them read a training that sounds more formal than it was, but there was a book about difficult conversations that I had them read, and then we talked about just how to keep it, like, it just had to be positive. I don't care, keep it positive, but keep it from just being a rant session every week. Like, there's a place for ranting, but then also how to navigate that. And so, like I said, I there were a couple things that came out of it that were brought to my attention. And then there was like, they weren't like supposed to come to me and tell me, like, they're not the tattle to tell me everything right. that happened around table, unless there was like a certain level measures of safety or situation that of course would kind of like a mandated reporter ish type thing. Right. But they felt supported. It gave them a place, especially when you're in home. And that's kind of what I was trying to build, was like, what do you call it? Like a water, like the,
like a water cooler.
Water moment. Cooler conversation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In an office place, right. That you don't get when you're all in home, right. You don't get that. And that's another piece, you know, that feeling like you're just stranded on a deserted island with this crazy family. I say that with love, but it's like, here I am all alone. I'm doing the best I can. Isn't no one seeing that I'm doing the best I can, you know?
Right.
So, I love,
and then the
I
caregiver's love, perspectives too. Like, it's so interesting, like, because it's a very fine balance. And so I always err on the side of believing the technician first, and then I still meet with the caregiver, right? Because inevitably something's going to come up where the caregiver is going to say, well, so-and-so isn't doing it this way. And it's really because they don't really care for that behavior technician. No, that behavior technician doesn't allow other behaviors or like other blurred lines that some other team members might allow. Mm-hmm. And then that's when you usually have to kind of examine, like, well, what's going on? And then, like, sometimes we found that, like, some of our behavior technicians were allowing caregivers to leave. And so caregivers obviously loved having those behavior technicians around, but then they did not want to have the behavior technician around who would not allow them to leave, right? And there we had, like, some would allow, like, them to basically not run an ABA session at all and just kind of shoot the breeze with the caregiver. So that's also something that you have to deal with. And they don't then like it whenever the BCBA comes in to supervise, because what do you mean I can't just hang out and talk? So it's hard. It's in home, I would say, is the most challenging because you have the least control. We ended up actually adding a center space for just a few learners. And literally a few. We have at three usually at most. But it's because there were still some skills that we were finding that we couldn't work on because of the family environment or because of the home environment. Or like, they're like, man, we really want them to be more social. And I'm like, well, cool. Let's take them to the park. Let's get them involved in like a preschool program or something like that, or a little gym. No. And so we're like, okay, well, can we at least get them to the center so we can get them around a couple of peers, right? Like, it's little things like that where it's just something to think about too, where that family dynamic impacts service and progress.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, I could talk to you for hours.
Same.
I want to respect your time. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to be sure to hit on today?
Well, I will do a little shameless plug. My colleagues and I are writing a book, and we're very excited about it. It should be released in March.
Oh, exciting. So definitely keep us
really excited.
Do you have pre-orders?
We'll start pre-orders, I believe, in January. We're working with Shane Spiker and his publishing company.
Nice.
So we're really excited. But the book is called Reframe, and it really does highlight these compassionate care service provider problems that we have, right, and how to work through them. We provide a lot of real-life case examples. Obviously, the names and a lot of the contexts have been somewhat changed to protect everyone, but we really were excited about sharing it with everyone for sure.
Oh, I'm super excited. Reach out to me and when you're ready for pre-orders and you're doing your book launch, and you guys can come on podcasts again and promote that further.
Great.
Yeah, we need more of what you do in our field, and I'm very thankful that you are here in the space.
Thanks so much, April.
All right.
I hope anything goes well today for y'all.
All right. Thank you so much. All right, everyone listening, thank you for being here, whether you're listening or watching. And if you don't mind taking a minute and subscribing and leaving us some feedback. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. Hopefully it was helpful. If you would like to gain access to this entire video and actually our entire library of videos, please join our ABA Business Leaders membership. You can find that at www.3piesquare.com.